few weeks ago, Dr. Cynthia Morrow, the Onondaga County Health Commissioner, was here to tell us about this year's flu, including the fact that the numbers of sufferers are growing this year, in part due to the fact that this year's flu vaccine doesn't protect us from all the flus people are actually coming down with. She told us about the guidelines for those who should get flu shots. Among them was the recommendation that children ages 6 months to 5 years should get a shot because they're among the populations at risk for getting very sick or dying from the flu. Well, just a few days later, a government advisory panel issued a new recommendation suggesting that the older age of children be extended to age 18, and not really because they're at risk from dying from the flu, but for some very different reasons, yet no less important. In the studio with me this morning is Dr. Joseph Domokowski, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at SUNY Upstate, to tell us about the new guidelines. Good morning, Dr. Domokowski.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
Well, now, you know, this idea, the reasons strike me as sort of, duh, why didn't we think of this before? It's almost common sense. Tell us what the new guideline is.
Yeah, the new guideline from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices tells us that we should be immunizing all children starting at 6 months of age through 18 years of age.
And all of those kids through age 18, not because they might get sick. Tell me why.
Well, certainly anybody can get flu in any given year, but the complications from flu or more severe flu happens in the very young and in the elderly.
Mm-hmm. So people who have compromised immune systems.
Exactly.
Or they're not strong enough.
And we've targeted those folks for vaccination all along. That's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But what's new here is we're talking about young, healthy adolescents and pre-adolescents that we're going to vaccinate routinely every year.
And the reason is?
The main reason is to try to decrease the amount of influenza circulating in our community. They are the ones that are spreading it, and they are the ones most likely to have a good, robust immune response to the vaccine.
And they are the ones with little brothers and sisters, and they are the ones with grandparents who they spend time with, and they are the ones that are transmitting it to the people who are at risk.
That's exactly right.
So once they get immunized, there isn't quite that same spread, is there?
There shouldn't be, no. And I think that the Japanese health ministry has shown this in Japan. Basically, if you immunize all school children, you can decrease the morbidity and even mortality from influenza in all age population.
That's fascinating. Is this being done anywhere? Has it been studied in the United States at all?
It has. There's been a couple of school-based programs to administer influenza vaccine at schools just to try to boost up vaccine rates in school-age children. And it works pretty well.
It does. And these are children who now they're not receiving shots necessarily. Are some of them getting that missed?
Most of the school-based programs that I'm aware of have used the injectable influenza vaccine.
Oh, they have.
But the flu mist vaccine is now an option down to age 2 years. So as long as you're otherwise healthy, that does offer an opportunity to use a non-injectable vaccine.
Is the vaccine the same, the vaccine that's giving, say, to a 6-month-old or a 1-year-old, the same as the vaccine given to an older person?
It's not exactly the same, but the components that that provide the immune response to protect you from flu are identical. It's just the amount of them changes depending on the age of the patient.
I see. You know, kids are going to complain. Number one, they don't want to have shots. Number two, they get to miss school when they get sick. So how do we make sure that our population is going to embrace this new recommendation?
Well, I think just even more education. We learn a lot about flu every year because it's seasonal and it's predictable. We just have to keep reminding folks that, we can have serious complications from influenza, hospitalizations from influenza, no matter how old we are. In 2003, 2004, we were reminded that young, healthy kids can die from flu.
Mm-hmm.
There were significant numbers of influenza deaths that year, and it raised our influenza vaccination rates that particular year. It's really too bad we have to have something like that happen to get our vaccine rates back up.
I would say that's true. Now, what about this year? Is it too late for kids to be given the immunizations if they haven't, or anybody, to get the immunization for this year?
Absolutely not too late to get flu vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control is really making a push this year to continue vaccinating through influenza season because flu continues to circulate sometimes into March, April, even May. So if the docs still have flu vaccine in their refrigerators, I'm telling them to keep using it till it's gone.
Very good. And what should we tell parents who do want to get their children immunized or anyone who wants to be immunized now? Do they get in touch with their family doctor?
Yeah, the best way to do that is to contact your primary care physician, your pediatrician, or your family doctor.
Make an appointment, get in, and get your kids those shots.
You got it. And sometimes it's as simple as having a nurse visit.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, in the future, I imagine we might even seek some clinics in some of the schools around here.
Clinic, school-based clinics. Already, sometimes you can go to the grocery store or to a pharmacy and get influenza vaccine. And it really does help increase vaccine rates by decreasing the number of hurdles and obstacles that people have to go through to get it.
And so in the future, hopefully we will see many, many fewer deaths from flu because we will have vaccinated so much of the population.
That is the goal, yes.
Very good. Well, Dr. Joseph Domokowski, thanks so much for coming by this morning. We better understand the flu, how it spreads, and I hope more people will be immunized.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Don't take it personally, or cat-itude is everything. You know how Garfield and his fellow felines are famous for their relax-to-the-max attitude? Not getting too attached to stuff, surviving stressful heart-thumping events, and returning to maxin' and relaxin' in a heartbeat? Well, turns out it might be catching. A new study found that cat owners had 30 to 40% less heart disease than other people. Now, we could easily dismiss this finding with, sure, stress is linked to heart disease, and people who can put up with cats have to be able to manage stress better to start with. But this new research does fit with prior controlled research with people who aren't cat owners, showing positive body responses like lower stress levels and lower blood pressure when pets are around. So in scientific lingo, it looks like, quote, converging lines of validity, or the wiggly tails of all these studies pointing to the same conclusion, more or less. Now, on the less side, this study found the heart benefits for cat folks, but not for dog lovers, interestingly enough. Researchers will have to sort this out scientifically, but anybody who's ever owned both a cat and a dog knows emotionally they are two different beasts. Dogs actually seem to care how you feel about them, while cats, well, they don't take you or almost anything personally. They know about the only problem with the world is dogs. So, just maybe cat lovers are trained by their cats to respond to the world a little differently, in a heart-healthy way. But how? Well, a big chunk of stress for us Homo sapiens comes from losing our perspective and taking ourselves and our lives so personally. I need to do this, have this, be this for me to be happy. Why did this happen to me? I'm the problem. If only I wasn't so stupid, ugly. The problem has to do with me, me, me. So next time our lives feel like an annoying schnauzer nipping at our butt, instead of screeching, ow, me, let's try the fork in the road to coping with that ancient, calming pussycat mantra. Me, ow, me, ow, me, ow. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill, folks. Time for a little nap. Thanks for listening.